Strap yourself in, because we're set up, switched on, and ready to go.
Yes, sir. Reading you loud and clear. Clear. The clock has started.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This week's episode of our podcast. Today we are going to interview some of the greatest and most influential minds in our field. By sharing our collective expertise, we will show you how to harness, control, and use your own skill set to achieve ultimate success and live the life you want. And now, please welcome your host.
Welcome to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. It's designed for the small government contractors, service providers, and manufacturers as part of the government contractor ecosystem, connecting people, organizations, and resources. I'm your host, Just Nate, and this week we got DK at the end of the table. Welcome, DK.
Thank you, Nate.
And Dennis, we actually took a break last week because we had a few additional ones. We actually didn't get to record, so it's been a week since we recorded.
Mm-hmm. And that shows...
It does, obviously. My soundboard's all messed up this week. So hopefully it goes okay. If not, it's just us. So
we have our guests on.
We do have our guests on.
Are you guys still there?
They're there. I haven't given an introduction.
Yes. Well, I just wanted to make sure they're still there.
Okay. So speaking of which, now that Dennis ruined my little intro here, Dennis, with us this week, we've got two people from a company called Vigilant Technologies. We've got the founder and CEO, Mr. Carl Ingram. Welcome, Carl.
Welcome. Thank you.
And we have Carl's director of BD, and he's also a software project manager, Dan Huffman. Welcome, Dan.
Hi there. Thank you. Great to be here.
So, man, sorry for all the technical difficulties this morning, but it happens. It's 2021.
It's technical stuff. It always
technical,
happens.
Dennis. I'm just going to keep telling you that.
It always happens.
So, well, you would have thought during a pandemic, you guys would have figured everything out. You had a whole year, right?
You'd think.
Stupid soft. You know what the problem is?
See, it's now, here
soft,
we go.
It's software updates. If we just get some good project managers that know software development and you get it right the first time.
Oh, a nice lead in.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Sure. That fixes everything.
So, sorry, Dan. I'm a double E, so I'm a hardware guy. So yeah. Right. You know, the age old, it's always a software problem. No, it's a hardware problem. So.
Oh yeah.
So
back and forth.
That's right.
So let's learn a little bit about Vigilant Technologies. Can you guys tell us kind of what you guys do and kind of the products and services you guys provide?
And you go ahead. You always do it better than me.
Well, Vigilant Technology started out about 17 years ago and primarily made its inroads in managed services, data center hosting services, business continuity, disaster recovery. And we've moved forward, we also provided a lot of traditional IT support, some web hosting and things of that nature. And then Carl had come up with this idea for our intelligent workspace technology, which is software that we're currently building. And that we've been working on for, I guess, I would say, Carl, about the last 9 years, it looks like, if I'm reading the reports correctly. So we kind of do both managed services and software development. And right now we're running as about a 60-40, 60% managed services for small and medium businesses, and also working the airport vertical. And then we also are doing our software development, I'd say about 40% research and development at this point, primarily with the Air Force.
You said airport vertical? You said airport vertical?
Correct. That's where a lot of our IT support is right now. And Carl, you might want to elaborate on that, but a lot of our MSP and IT augmentation, staff augmentation services are in the airport vertical.
Yeah, we focus mostly on mid-sized airports all over the country. Maybe one or two outside, but primarily in the country, dealing with flight information systems. But we do a lot more than that. But that's one of the primary solutions that we work with.
Okay.
Okay. So you said airport vertical, and then you also said
Air Force.
Air Force. Are you developing software for Air Forces? Is that kind of what one of the things you guys do?
Exactly. The core product was already patented in 2019, so it was intended for a wide range of markets, and that got started on the commercial side. Moved down the road a ways, but then we learned about the SBIR program a few years ago, and we got involved in that. Took in our first phase one in April of 2019. That led to a phase two at Space Pitch Day, November of that same year. Since then, we picked up another phase one and another phase two, developing that software for use in satellite operations units inside the Air Force and Space Force.
Okay.
So I'm curious, because we can get into this a little bit, but I'm actually in the middle of developing a entire software factory from ground up for our company that Dennis and I work for right now, which is under a U.S. Space Force contract. So I'm kind of curious what you guys are seeing in your market. Are you guys seeing traditional software development, or are they going more agile, more extreme programming, paired programming, stuff like that? Or what are you guys seeing?
Well, what I'm seeing, generally speaking, is that the Air Force, in standing up their Platform One environment, they're really, really trying to adopt the industry model of agile software development. And so they've embraced that model. They've really, from what I'm seeing, made a point of trying to use what seems to be working best in the industry, all the industry best practices built up around the agile model, and apply it to the way they roll out software in the DoD. So although the Air Force is heading that up and kind of spearheading that operation, it's my understanding that Platform One is intended for the wider DoD over time. And we're also seeing software factories stand up in other units or other departments, I should say. I know the Navy was working on one not long ago that we took a look at and were interested in being part of.
I think
I believe the other services are. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think they're called Blackbird. I think the Navy is. Or something
like that. They Black Ship or Black Flag, or I can't remember, something along that line. But we definitely, you know, we're interested in that. And Carl, I think you've seen some other things that would be in support of that, if I'm not mistaken.
The Navy's really interested in Platform One type technologies and software factories. And the Air Force itself is actually doing like a hybrid DevOps agile type environment. So, I mean, they're fully Docker integrated, that type of thing. So we use a lot of those technologies to get applications into the environment.
Yeah.
The Navy's actually also, they asked us about putting together, we got an open white paper to do a DevOps factory for the Navy as well. So everybody's really looking at this, and not just in the software development process, but actually in the business development processes as well, which is pretty interesting.
No, I think that's really good information. I'm seeing the same thing that you guys are. One of my concerns that I've personally have had is, you know, I think they all stood up very quickly and they had a great idea because they wanted to get away from Waterfall, but, and it worked great, right? When it was Space Camp and stuff like that, and then became Platform One. But what I see that doing is I see it adding a lot of processes around it. So hopefully they can maintain their momentum and not slow down too much and get back to the way they've right. been for the last how many years and do, you know, 12 weeks is not a sprint. So.
Right. Well, and my observation, and again, having spent some time now, when I was up at Catalyst Accelerator last year and had the opportunity to be on campus there and kind of get up close and personal with the guys who were doing Platform One and the folks who were involved in that process and the folks working to move in that direction and saw the Space Camp and all that other stuff, I can see what they're trying to do is really learn how that process works so they can improve what had gone on historically with software development in the Air Force and the other services. Because if I understand it correctly, we were dealing with an archaic mode of doing it, and the whole industry just grew by leaps and bounds outside the military services. And I even remember as far back as Navy Gold Coast a few years ago, hearing a vice admiral of logistics talking about how far behind they were in the supply chain, just keeping everything moving forward in that part of their world. And it dawned on me at that point that, you know, these guys aren't talking to industry in the way they should be. And not long after that, I started hearing about initiatives like what we're doing now with Platform One. So I think there's a learning curve there, but I also think it's well-intentioned, and I think it's the right thing to do long-term. They'll only get better at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm also seeing that they're asking for that stuff, but once you start bringing it to them, they get a little scared of it too. Moving them into the 21st century. That's the conversation I just having before this meeting was, you know, we kind of have to walk them to this place and show that the risk is mitigated. The whole cloud-based solutions and DevSecOps, and that's not so much anymore, but agile and some of this, you know, more expeditious development of products and software. And then the whole supply chain area, like you talked about, and even cybersecurity, you know, people have been doing this for decades, obviously not well enough, but, you know, there's still a comfort zone out there. And once you start trying to bring in a lot of this new tech, they want it, they hear it, you know, we need to have some of this stuff. We want some AIML because we need some AIML. But when you really try to bring in that technology, they tend to back up a little bit and, okay, what are you really bringing us? And maybe that's a little too far for us. And so there's a little bit of a learning curve.
Yeah.
I did want to talk to you guys about, so the other thing you said was the Intel workspace technology. You called it, you said you do two things, managed services and software development, but originally you said you do intelligent workspace technology. What do you mean by that? Is that just software or is that something else?
Carl, do you want to elaborate on that first a little bit? That's, you know, that's the thing you came up with.
So. Right.
Yeah, the intelligent workspace is essentially a workspace, you know, a GUI or web page that you're working in that is augmented with artificial intelligence and machine learning.
See, there you go, and throwing so that out. It allows again. You. They want some of. They all want some of that. What does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah, they really do. I spell the words out to kind of make people impressed sometimes.
No, you're right on.
He totally does.
Yeah. I mean, you're right on though, because that's what they want, right? They say, hey, we want machine learning and, you know, and we want, you know, once we start doing things with artificial intelligence to come in and maybe streamline the workforce and how we do things. But again, what does that exactly mean though? What are you guys doing with that?
So artificial intelligence is pretty broad. It's getting kind of cloudy, like the word cloud. But essentially what we're doing is using mostly machine learning, which is basically understanding how data has certain patterns when you analyze a lot of it together, and then presenting those patterns to human beings or having the artificial intelligence actually work off that knowledge. Our solution uses what's called a hybrid model. A lot of studies from IBM found that the hybrid model of artificial intelligence and machine learning is kind of like, the best way I've heard it described was when, you know, they, back in the Bobby Fischer days, and they had, you know, chess games, and then finally one of the IBM AIs, Watson, I think, was actually starting to beat some chess players some of the time, you know, maybe 30-40% of the time.
Right.
And then when they combined artificial intelligence with a human being, they won every time. And that's when you basically have that hybrid model working together.
So what is that? What does that look like though? What is that? So intelligent workspace technology, what does that look like? So I'm on my computer, I guess. And what are you guys proposing that this thing does?
I'm assuming big data.
So right? Yeah, actually Dan coined that word best. He says, you know, and I loved it when he said it, who says program managers can't innovate? but Dan calls it, we make big data small. And I really love that concept. And that kind of gives you a picture of essentially how we shorten down the human response time by doing all the heavy analytics, the heavy lifting for them, and present them that resultant set for them to make the final decision. And I think Dan may have had a better way of saying it, but get it right, Dan?
Yeah, you're really close. I mean, the way I conceptualize it, and I think this is one of the things that gives me a little bit of an advantage, because I don't have a background in IT like Carl does or in highly technical things. My background's in education, so I have a little bit more objectivity
right.
sometimes about the way things appear to the layman. And the reason that this made sense to me once I really understood what they were trying to do, what they're doing is they're shortening the time it takes for you to get to the answers, but in a particular context. So, you know, you can go Google something all day long and still never find it.
Right.
What we're doing is we're leveraging AI to be able to help with that research in a way that gets to the context-specific relevant answers fast, because the power of AI, obviously, the computer's a whole lot faster than you are. And if what you do is you set up a search of sorts and you say, hey, during this last 6 months, this is how I've done my job. And your AI is right there alongside you in your workspace going, oh yeah, I remember when you looked that up, go look here. Or I remember when you asked about that last time you were doing a proposal, that's where you put it. That's where those breadcrumbs go. And if you're looking for something about a specific article that you're, you know, trying to find, or a specific machine that you're looking up, or whatever it might be, the AI is already halfway down the road for you before your brain catches up. And it's already made a lot of the connections based on your prior historical workflow. So that's what the value of the product is. We feel that it goes into that big data world and it sees the highlights before you ever could. And it brings it together for you in a kind of tied up in a bow, if you will.
So do you actually have a product? Is it actually a thing, or do you sit down with, you know, the company or the team or the guys and develop it for each, you know, requirement? Or is there like a something that you guys are promoting?
Yeah, it's actually a thing. It runs. It kind of does its own thing. Once you start using it, you can tell it to follow certain topics, and it starts doing the work. You know, starts curating information for you. We've been running it for almost two years now, but the first version of the product has been around, like Dan said, almost 9 years. It was something, a concept we came up with when I worked at Intel, the big chip maker, and we did technology for them, this decision support technology. And we realized that, wow, we need something that does a lot of this crunching for people. So this thing will work on any platform. It can work in any industry. Obviously, we're focusing it on aviation and Air Force right now, but it was designed initially to work on IT problem solving or just typical document management stuff like an attorney may need, or an accountant.
Please, please, please tell me you call this product Chappie.
Why Chappie?
Chappie. Yeah.
So Chappie, the movie. From, I don't know when it was, 2015.
I remember.
Where the artificial intelligence robot was Chappie.
That's not WALL-E.
No, yep. WALL-E's another artificial intelligence.
It's like WALL-E. No, and by the way, this is not like the guy from 2001. It's not like that.
That was
Hal. Yeah, Hal.
Yeah. It's a friendly robot, and he will never kick you into space to die. It's not going to go that way.
Well, I was writing on a little card here to Nate going, beta test? Yeah. We want to talk to these guys.
No, we will definitely talk to these guys after the podcast recording ends.
Great.
So, let me put it another question the way Dennis is asking it. So if I am the military, for example, and I just have a massive amount of data, you guys, I'm assuming, can take your product, point to that data to ingest that data, and then figure out what they need from that data, right?
Absolutely.
Meaning that they don't have to create the data inside of your product.
Correct. The data, we're data agnostic. So if we have a data source, you know, we know how to use APIs. We know how to plug stuff in and talk to it and make it talk to us. So we don't need it to be within our tool. That's the beauty of it, is that it's really, really agnostic to the platform that we're talking with.
Providing their data is somewhat consistent, I would assume, all the files and not changing every single time.
Well, Carl can elaborate more than I can on this, but I'm under the impression that we can even deal with unstructured data to a large degree, but it really depends on, you know, what type of data we're working with. Carl, can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, structured data is actually in some ways a little more painful to work with, but unstructured data we can capture almost instantly. But the structured data, we work well with that as well, especially anything that's in a relational database But it doesn't have to be. We can kind of sift data from little pieces and conduct it real time, or we can grab it from custom data sources that the organization may have. And that integration usually takes us a couple days max to do that. You know, we have to understand the idiosyncrasies of some of the data, but the system will correct for a lot of that once it gets it.
Boy, I can see a lot of application for this, you guys, because we do some, we do data collect and analytics. And, you know, a lot of the problem is there's been so much data collected, as you guys know, the amount of information is out there previously, but it's not very well structured. People just put them in files or just stuck them out there. And now being able to go back into and pull that data, that's really phenomenal. If you guys can do that, we definitely need to talk. So,
yeah. So
yeah, we're happy to talk about it. Absolutely.
So definitely. I'm going to take us to a quick break, guys. We do have a sponsor. We want to make sure we get in on this podcast real quick. So give us 30 seconds and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is James Jordan, founder and CEO of Archer Jordan. We're the leader in providing professionally managed fringe benefit plans to government contractors. Let me ask you a question. Is contract compliance stressing you out? Archer Jordan meets the challenge of ensuring regulatory compliance and maximum cost savings through our flagship program, Aero Contractors Trust. Visit archerjordan.com to schedule a free consultation today.
Welcome back to this week's Smallest Cast podcast. And this week we have Vigilant Technologies. We've got Carl and Dan on the line. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks.
I'm always like bopping around a little bit to that music that Archer Jordan's got playing.
It is pretty catchy, I gotta say.
It is. I'm like, it's a happy place. Dun, dun.
Well, anyway, I'm telling you guys, I'm thrown off right now because I didn't have, we're going to add our music in post-production for the intro. That sets the mood for me. And now I'm just like all thrown off.
But, I'm good with that last one. We're good. Hey, so this was really good, you guys. And again, we're very interested in about a few things. I did want to shift the focus of the conversation a little bit away from the technology and kind of get to, you know, a lot of our listeners are startups as well. And I like to talk a little bit about kind of, you know, what brought you to this place and how you got into the business and, you know, lessons learned, all that kind of stuff. So what I'd like to start with is, so how did you guys get here? Or I guess, Carl, since you're the lead here, what brought you to this space of doing this type of business and into the government contracting?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Like, I feel like I could write a book or blog on that someday, and I probably should.
We take blog suggestions.
Yeah. we'll post your blog on our website too.
That's right.
Here's a thought. I'll do a podcast. How about that?
Well, we're just trying to get you guys out there even further. So we're doing the podcast. Yeah. You write up the blog, put it on your website.
That's right.
We'll put it on ours as well.
And then you write the book. We'll help you do the book. And then we'll get a book deal going, and it'll be great.
Yeah, we can read.
Yeah. And then webinars and, oh, man, live conferences, TED Talks. I can see it now.
Nice.
You got to start with TEDx first.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Sorry. Well, I could say I started on a farm, but that just wasn't my history. I'm from Chicago, so lots of people, lots of problems to solve. And I joined the Navy a while back, and I got into technology, and I've loved it ever since because I love solving problems. And from there, I went to work for Intel and learned there are a lot of problems to solve that I wasn't aware of, and realized that there's just not a lot of technology that kind of helps you aggregate all the information you need to do to solve a problem. So every day, you know, I go to work, I'd have a million windows open, I'm looking for a ton of things, and I spend all that time trying to get to that point where I can get, I have enough data to get into the flow mode. And not to mention, when you're dealing with distractions, that makes it even harder. And although computers love to multitask, human beings, we really struggle with it. And so that was my aloha moment, I call it, where I realized I need to come up with something that puts all that information together. So every time I'd go to work, I'd kind of organize everything so I could have everything all put together. And I hopefully leave that there for the whole week. You know, God forbid I have to reboot, which back in the Windows days, although we're still in the Windows days, reboots happen a lot, and they still do. In fact, they're now spreading to Linux and Mac and everything else.
Right.
So I need it. I realize we need it. Yeah, exactly. We needed a tool that kept everything in RAM for you permanently, and that's, sorry for that term, I'm an IT guy, but basically kind of kept everything in place no matter where you went or what you were doing, where you weren't having to set that up every time. And that's where I came up with this concept. When I recognized there was a big need for this, I decided, you know, it'd probably be a good idea to create a company or entity that, you know, would explore doing this. And so I grabbed a lot of my friends from Intel, and we started the business. We originally built our own knowledge base to kind of keep all this information together. And we started to really leverage that information as a resource for other organizations.
Were you still working at Intel while you did this, or did you guys take a break and you're just going for it and, you know, you paid for it out of your own pocket, or did you have investors, or how did all that work?
Yeah, we were our own self-investors, and we were still working at Intel, of course. That's always the best way. An old story, an old saying goes, you know, don't quit your current job until your new job is paying. Yeah, it's paying for everything, or as close to as you can get. Some people now say until your new job's paying for three of your old jobs. But, you know, that sometimes, you know, the time doesn't allow you to multitask that much, because, you know, you've got to balance. You got to have life. You got to have, you know, kids. You know, that's going to be more important at the end of the day, that, you know, your kids know who you are, then they know you started this great company. So you got to find that work-life balance. And that was one of the goals of of this tool that we developed, was that, you know, my vision is that this would give me time back. You know, it would give the world time back, that, you know, that most valuable commodity. And that was the goal of that. You know, when we realized we could probably save people 30 to 60% of their time, you know, switching back and forth between things and having to aggregate all this information over and over and over again if we just did it for them. And we couldn't find any tools that quite did it, but we could find lots of tools we could augment to make better. And that was the goal. And that's how we got into the artificial intelligence business. It's really interesting. When we started this, artificial intelligence wasn't as available as it is now. So it took us a while to get the product off the ground, because the technology wasn't there yet. And we finally met that point, you know, where technology and need kind of intersected.
Yep.
And but go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, the computing power, nor the, yeah, none of it was there. You're right.
Yeah, not even eight years ago.
I want to jump in real quick.
Yeah,
I want to say
ahead.
That again, coming in from another background, once I got started with Vigilant and I had been embedded with them for a couple of years working on the procurement side, I started to see the real value of this product. As I'm sure you know, from a business development perspective, go write a proposal and you'll know everything you need to know about why Carl created this software, because I couldn't find anything in SharePoint.
Yeah.
So if you're
working SharePoint?
In any small, yeah, we're using SharePoint. So
that's better than a drive.
If you're familiar with SharePoint, you know, I thought I was going to pull all my remaining hair out trying to figure out where to find the data that I needed to write coherent proposals. And once I understood the process of writing a proposal, everything started to make more sense when I realized what his concept behind the software was. And when I started using it for myself, once we had it, you know, in a place where it could be patented, it was actually moving forward, I was actually using it to do searches and things like that. It's a brilliant piece of work, because it really does take into consideration the amount of time that you otherwise spend doing the mundane things, the research specific task, the difficult task of finding stuff, needle in a haystack kind of stuff. And because it's context relevant, it absolutely does save time.
Yeah, well, that's why I was saying we need to talk afterwards, because I'm in the middle of three ongoing proposals right now, and definitely could use that support.
Yeah, man.
Well, they say the best products out there are the ones that are developed from
somebody's
need,
problem,
right? Yeah. Somebody's problem, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. That's why I developed our internal CRM database, and
that's
and
why we started the smalls.
That's why we exactly right.
So I do have another question for you. So as you started up, did you use PTAC or any of the small business development agent SBDC small business development centers?
SBDC.
Yes.
Or PTAC, the Procurement Technical Assistance Center.
Yeah. Were you using that, or did you just kind of stumble your way through into the DoD world? Government contracting. Sorry.
Yeah, we did both. We had a couple of misfires as far as which direction to go. The SBA will say, well, you know, go to FBO and go to all these places where all our, you know, government contracting shit happened. And those things are true, but most contracts are already, you know, well positioned towards specific vendors before they get to FBO or any public place.
Right.
And the part that we had to get a handle on the most is building relationships. And in our procurement process now, that's our first step, is when we go out there, we try to find people who are interested in capabilities and technology that we want to focus on. And we try to be the best that we can be in that area. And sometimes just being flexible is the thing that's needed. And once you do that and you get a little, you know, you start small, and that was one thing we didn't understand. We tried to start for the biggest project we could go after, and you know, there's only an incredible amount of luck that's ever going to happen.
Yep.
You know, so you find people to partner with it that are going to mentor you, and if you can find those things, then your whole business, you know, everything jump starts. And we didn't do a great job of finding mentors, so we probably did it the hard way, or we would have been even further ahead. But I call it, as you know, we needed the development time to come up with our intelligent workspace. So
we actually push that a lot, you know, with the smalls. We're about networking, right? So you can find the partners to do the work. And then the mentoring is a key piece,
too. And boy,
do
we have a partner for you guys.
And then so the mentoring piece is important, too. We work with quite a few small companies. And, you know, just yesterday I was talking to somebody, and they're like, well, I just don't even know where to go or how to get there. And, you know, we developed this product, but I don't know how to, you know, get that product to the government, or how do I get on a contract? And I looked at some of these proposals and I was like, oh my God, I don't know. I don't even know where to start, and I can't do this. And so I said, well, that's why you have like PTAC and all that, but that's why you have groups like the Smalls or our company that'll go, hey, we're looking for this type of technology. We'll help you to move that forward. And so that's a really important note to make, that, you know, you don't, as you're starting a small government contractor or a small company, you know, there's lots of resources out there, and use those resources, take advantage of them. There's people that want to help you to grow and succeed. Don't be afraid to ask for that. That's kind of a key
thing.
Yeah,
there is some real people out there, not just looking to
take you.
Yeah, to take, yeah, you know, take you down or anything.
Well,
like
yeah,
that.
That's, I absolutely found that to be true. And I know Carl did too. Is that when really the first step on this path that made the biggest difference was when we were selected to be part of the Hyperspace Challenge in New Mexico.
Oh, yep. Familiar with them. Yep.
That's what really, and I, Carl, do you remember who introduced us to that program? Cause I know it was somebody we had already formed a relationship with, but one of the folks that we had talked to in a kind of in a consulting role had suggested that we look at that program and you know, apply to it. And we did, we were selected. Carl and I went over there and spent the 3 or 4 days with them. Gave presentations. We ran into a number of consultants, some of whom actually became directly associated with us. And that's exactly how we got into the CBIR program.
Yep.
Was starting there, really getting our feet wet in the networking aspect of it, and, you know, learning who needed what we were doing, learning who could benefit from it, and then moving through that process from there.
Yep.
Yeah, you're right. Tom Folter from SBDC was the big guy.
Yeah, it might have been. We do have a great small business development council consultant that we work with regularly, and he may have been the one that pointed us to it originally. Yeah.
So what today, now that you guys have grown your founded company, what do you see as your biggest challenge today?
Wow.
I know what
the filing is probably. Yeah.
That's usually everybody's response. Let's see. Well, I own my own business.
Right. Carl, go ahead. I think Carl has it right, though. Go ahead, Carl. I know what you're going to say.
Yeah. Scaling, I think, is one thing that we always, you know, we struggle with. We've got so many things that we're doing. And once you find that niche that seems to best fit you, you've got to start looking at scaling, and you got to start looking at maybe reducing some of the efforts you put in other areas that aren't critical. I always put it in my weekly to the team. And of course, my team will say, when's the last time you did a weekly, Carl? But, but one of the things that we focus on, and we do have it, everybody has in their weeklies, is finding the right busy. And that's what I like to stress to any company that's starting up or any business is, you know, find the right busy, the thing that moves you the most and that you feel good when you're doing it. And it helps your client. It helps the people that you're partnering with, which your client should always be your partner. And if you start that way, then life is going to be a lot easier, a lot better. Right. Focus on that.
Strategic alignment. I think you start kind of, and we're figuring that out a little bit here too, where we're at is we've had a lot of success recently. And so we're having to say, I mean, you have to learn to say no at some things because it's not in alignment with where you're going and you're not getting the juice for the squeeze.
Well, you're right. And I think actually you hit on something that I've always said that's been it can either make or break you. Is whatever business you're in, whether it's a product-based, service-based, whatever, it's how do you scale? If you can't scale, if you haven't thought about how you're going to scale your business, you're just asking for a failure at that point when you need to scale within the next 24 hours, right?
Or you get complacent and don't think about what we're doing next.
And that's fine. I guess if you never plan on growing your company, you're fine with having 10 employees and that's what you never want any more than that, then you don't need to worry about scaling. But you're going to be turning down, you know, more work then.
Well, it's not just scaling. So I've seen recently several companies that didn't look at business development and they just were doing what they did. And when that ended, they had nothing else. And so you do have to kind of have that outlook.
You know, I've had this conversation too. A lot of these government contractors, service providers, if you will, whether it be ANAS, Advisory and Assistant Services, CETA, whatever the types of contract, if you're a service type contractor, I always recommend you guys have some type of product base to fall back on, because at some point you're going to be too large to go after any more service-based contracts because of the way the government contracting works. So you should have something on the backside. So kind of diversify whatever your offerings are.
Well, that's kind of a crux of where we're at right now. I think to answer your earlier question, in addition to what Carl said about scaling, we're now faced with, some pretty solid evidence that it might be time to do some kind of a diversification, or at least set something up so that we can work in both directions at once, you know, the service side and the software side. And those are conversations that, we're just starting to have, but I think we are at that point where that's a good sign. You know, we've grown enough now of a following, and we have enough work in front of us and enough potential with what we've created that it's really now time to start having those kind of conversations.
Which actually brings me to my next question.
Good place to be.
How big are you guys? Because I see you are a service disabled veteran owned small business, SDVOSB. Mm-hmm. How big are you guys?
10 people nominally. And Carl, you can elaborate on that if you want to give them the size other than that. But it's about 10 of us regularly that are on the team.
Okay, that's good.
We've expanded. We have kind of bubbles where we're working on a project, and then we bring in contractors or partners. And we do a lot of work through partners. We really, our strength and longevity has been totally related to the partners that we have. And not just the large partners, because the large partners aren't always that flexible for dealing with small businesses. But the other partners, the partners that are similar sizes or maybe a little bigger to us, they become great allies, and you're able to bring a whole team up with you of partners and contractors and subcontractors. And it really works well by building those relationships and keeping them.
Yeah, we're big fans of that too. Strategic partnering. We try to find those group of companies that share like ideas, like culture, I guess, and try to move those forward.
My favorite saying that I've said for many, many years, running teams is surround yourself with successful people and they'll help make you successful.
That's George Bush.
Whatever it is.
That's so true, man. It's 100% true.
Do not go for the top, right? I mean, start by bringing the smart people in and make them friends, and they'll help make you successful.
Right. Right. It's true. And I do want to say, and it's a shameless shout out to the folks at Catalyst Accelerator who provided us that opportunity at every possible turn when we were up there last year. I think a lot of those folks and a lot of that program, and I know Carl will agree with me, we grew a great deal as a result of our participation. Our selection and our participation in that program made a huge difference for us in 2020.
Yeah, we're fans,
yeah,
too.
Really big fans.
We're teaming with them on several efforts. Well. So yes, shout out to them. Yeah. And PTAC and SBDC. There's, like I said earlier, you know, there's such a large group out there that wants to help small government contractors or companies that would like to do work with the government. There's a whole ecosystem out there, which is what we're about, that really wants to help others to be successful. I mean, really, because if you're successful, right, we're successful, they're successful,
the
right?
Successful,
I call
right?
I call it the win-win-win. We're right. Always looking for the win-win-win, where you get three right. different groups that have, you know, something out of it. So, well, hey, we're running a little low on time here, and I did want to talk about where can people find you on the World Wide Web, and how do they get a hold of you guys?
Well, go to https://www.vigilant1.com. That's spelled V-I-G-I-L-A-N-T and the number 1.com. And you can reach out to me directly. My email address is Daniel, Huffman, @vigilant1.com. You can reach out to Carl too, but he's pretty busy. He may not answer right away. So it's always better to reach out to me first.
Right. Okay.
And yeah, then, you can also send to info@vigilant1.com too.
Yeah, that's a good point. We do have another intake address, info@vigilant1.com.
Okay. And then when we post the podcast, we'll also put contact information on there too, so folks can get a hold of you as well.
Yeah, and Dan, right. I love the way you gave us your address. The way you spelled out Vigilant One, it was almost, I felt like I was watching a infomercial on TV right there. So
it's my education background, clearly. I just can never let that go entirely.
I'm like, all I could think of is when you tell me that, I could think of those commercials. Talk to your doctor today about Vigilant and see if it's right for you.
Great. I guess that's a good slogan. Okay, business development.
There you go. Talk to your team. See if Vigilant is right for you. So
see if Vigilant is right for you. That sounds great.
I actually wrote down something.
Be vigilant.
I actually wrote down something that you guys need to use as your mission statement is giving the world time back. I thought that was a great quote. Just so you know.
That is. You know, very cool. Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah, you know how, what is it, like bringing computers to the world or whatever was Microsoft or one of those guys. I don't, but anyways, I thought that was a good lead. Giving time back to the world. That's important, like you said. So, hey, you guys, thank you very much for today. This was very educational. And for you listeners out there, I highly advise that you take a look at what you're doing and if Vigilant can help you with managed services or the Intel Workspace technology, which is what, when we get done with this phone call, I want to talk to you guys about. So very exciting times.
It's a pleasure to be here, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, I
absolutely
100% agree with it, guys. And thank you guys so much for being on the podcast. We're going to get you guys' stuff out as far as we possibly can do to help out. We'll go from there. And then Dennis, I need to I need to send out a shameless plug for the Smalls. You know, we're now getting wider and wider reach, bringing more and more people on. So if anybody out there in listener land is looking for a place to drop some of their cash as a sponsorship, we are now looking for sponsorships again for, you know, trade for commercial spots and all that kind of stuff. So let us know at justnate@thesmalls.org. And till next week, this is Just Nate signing off.
Thanks for listening.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Smallscast podcast. Connect with us at thesmalls.org. Don't forget to sign up to our newsletter to receive our free materials. See you at the next episode.
See you at the next episode.